I'm sure you've all seen the No Kings protest that's been going on around the country. And I agree that they shouldn't. We shouldn't be having a king. And I don't know if they've been doing this since the start of the country. But if they have, they've been doing a really good job because we haven't had a king so far. And seeing some of the presidents we've had through time, I'm pretty thankful about that. But I just wanted to look at some example of kings in the past. First one I'd like to look at is Rehoboam. Find that story in 1 Kings 12, where Rehoboam has told his people he will be even harder on them than Solomon had been. Jeroboam was there with the people when Rehoboam made his proclamation. God had sent a prophet to Jeroboam, a servant of Solomon, to tell him he was going to give him 10 tribes of Israel because of the idolatry Solomon's wife had led him to. So if we pick up that story in 1 Kings 12, and starting in 15. So the king did not listen to the people, for the turn of events was from the Lord, that he might fulfill his word, which the Lord had spoken by Ahijah the Shilonite to Jeroboam the son of Nebat. Now when all of Israel saw that the king did not listen to them, the people answered the king, saying, "What shall we have? What share have we in David? We have no inheritance in the son of Jesse. To your tents, O Israel. Now see to your own house, O David." So Israel departed to their tents. But Rehoboam reigned over the children of Israel who dwelt in the cities of Judah. Then King Rehoboam sent Adoram, who was in charge of the revenue, but all Israel stoned him with stones, and he died. Therefore King Rehoboam mounted his chariot in haste and to flee to Jerusalem. So Israel has been in rebellion against the house of David to this day. Now it came to pass when all Israel heard that Jeroboam had come back, they sent for him and called him to the congregation and made him king over all Israel. There was none who followed the house of David, but the tribe of Judah only. Rehoboam had let his power and his upbringing go to his head. He was completely out of touch with the people. He ruled who were overburdened, taxation, excesses of royalty. Unfortunately, Jeroboam turned out to not be a good leader of the 10 tribes and led them into idolatry. Now we'll talk about Ahab and Jezebel. There arose a king named Ahab and his wife Jezebel, daughter of a Sidonian pagan king, who took the northern tribes into abject idolatry. We can find this story in 1 Kings 21, starting in verse 1. And it came to pass after these things that Naboth the Jezreelite had a vineyard which was in Jezreel, next to the place of Ahab, king of Samaria. So Ahab spoke to Naboth, saying, "Give me your vineyard, that I may have it for a vegetable garden, because it is near next to my house. And for it, I will give you a vineyard better than it, or if it seems good to you, I will give you its worth in money." But Naboth said to Ahab, "The Lord forbid that I should give the inheritance of my fathers to you." So Ahab went to his house, sullen and displeased because of the word which Naboth the Jezreelite had spoken to him. For he had said, "I will not give you the inheritance of my fathers." And he lay down on his bed and turned away his face and would eat no food. But Jezebel, his wife, came to him and said to him, "Why is your spirit so sullen that you ate no food?" And he said to her, "Because I have spoke to Naboth, the Jezreelite, and said to him, 'Give me your vineyard for money, or else, if it pleases you, I will give you another vineyard for it.' And he answered, 'I will not give you my vineyard.'" And verse 7, Then Jezebel, his wife, said to him, "You now exercise authority over Israel. Arise, eat food, and let your heart be cheerful, and I will give you the vineyard of Naboth, the Jezreelite." And she wrote letters in Ahab's name, sealed them with his seal, and sent the letters to the elders and the nobles who were dwelling in the city of Naboth. She wrote the letters saying, "Proclaim a fast and seat Naboth with high honor among the people, and seat two men, scoundrels, before him to bear witness against him, saying, 'You have blasphemed God and the king,' and take him out and stone him that he may die." So the men of the city, the elders, the nobles, and inhabitants of the city did as Jezebel had sent to them, and it was written in the letters which she had sent to them. They proclaimed a fast and seated Naboth with high honor among them, among the people, and two men, scoundrels, came in and sat before him, and the scoundrels witnessed against him, against Naboth, in the presence of the people, saying, "Naboth has blasphemed God and the king." Then they took him outside the city and stoned him with stones, so that he died. Then they sent to Jezebel, saying, "Naboth has been stoned and is dead." Verse 15, it came to pass, when Jezebel heard that Naboth had been stoned and was dead, that Jezebel said to Ahab, "Arise, take possession of the vineyard of Naboth, the Jezreelite, which he refused to give you for money. For Naboth is not alive, but dead." So it was, when Ahab heard that Naboth was dead, that Ahab got up and went down to the possession of the vineyard of Naboth, the Jezreelite. And God had warned the Israelites that this would happen. If we turn to 1 Samuel 8, 10 through 18, so Samuel told all the words of the Lord to the people who asked him for a king. And he said, "This will be the behavior of the king who will reign over you. He will take your sons and appoint them for their own chariots and to be his horsemen, and some will run before the chariots. He will appoint captains over the thousands and captains over the fifties. Will set some with a plow to plow his ground and reap his harvest, and some to make his weapons of war and equipment for his chariots. He will take your daughters to be perfumers, cooks, and bakers, and he will take the best of your fields, your vineyards, and your olive groves, and give them to his servants. And he will take a tenth of your grain and your vintage and give it to his officers and servants. And he will take your male servants, your female servants, your finest young men, your donkeys, and put them to his work. He will take a tenth of your sheep, and you will be as his servants. And you will cry out in that day because of your king, whom you have chosen for yourselves, and the Lord will not hear you in that day." I mean, they were told they were going to be treated horribly, and yet they said, "Nah, sign up for that. Sounds good." Now we'll look at some more modern examples. Bad King John and the Magna Carta. King John was a controversial English monarch who ruled from 1199 to 1216 and is often remembered as one of England's worst kings due to his cruelty, poor military leadership, and oppressive taxation. He reigned and marked by the loss of most of England's French territories, constant conflicts with the barons, and a bitter struggle with the Pope. His arbitrary rule, including imprisoning nobles seizing lands and imposing heavy fines fueled widespread resentment. The Magna Carta, issued on 15 June 1215 at Runnymede, was a direct result of this unrest. Forced by rebellious barons, Big John agreed to the charter to protest to prevent civil war. The Magna Carta established key principles such as the rule of law, protection from illegal imprisonment, and the right to swift judgment. It also limited the king's power by requiring consent for taxation and creating a council of 25 barons to oversee royal compliance. Despite signing the Magna Carta, King John immediately sought to nullify it, appealing to Pope Innocent III, who declared the Carta invalid, shameful, and base. This led to the First Barons' War, and John died in 1216, shortly after the conflict escalated. Though the original Magna Carta failed in its immediate purpose, it became a foundational document in English constitutional history, influencing later laws and democratic ideas, including the U.S. Constitution. Now we can go to Henry VIII. He reigned from 1509 to 47. He's usually remembered for his six wives and his legendary appetite. Famously, he sent two of his queens, Anne Boleyn and Catherine Howard, to their deaths on the executioner's block at the Tower of London for not producing any male heir. Henry Tudor, Henry VIII's father, was one of the last surviving heirs of the House of Lancaster, one of two powerful medieval royal families who fought over the throne for generations during the War of the Roses. Henry VII seized the throne in 1485, defeating Richard III, the last monarch from the House of York. The Tudor period had begun. Henry VIII was born in Greenwich Palace on 28 June 1491. Little attention was given to his birth. While his parents, Henry VII and Elizabeth of York, would have been pleased to have another male heir, the infant, Henry, was just a spare. All hopes for the Tudor dynasty rested on Henry's elder brother, Arthur, 1486 to 1502. The heir to the throne, the younger Henry, was destined for a pleasurable life as a prince. But then Arthur died at a young age, and Henry was thrust in the role of future king. As he grew into a young man, Henry flourished. Charming and accomplished, he wrote music and poetry and threw himself into all sports of the Tudor court: hunting, jousting, wrestling, swordplay, hawking, and tennis. He is described as a golden prince and a universal genius. In a world dominated by war and men, countries ruled by women were considered vulnerable to being acquired by others through marriage. It was a king's principal responsibility to secure the peace and prosperity of his realm by having a son, a king in waiting. He was given in marriage to his brother's wife, Catherine. She was 23 and he was 18. Catherine's first miscarriage occurred early in their marriage. She was then gave birth to a son, Christian Harry, on 1 January 1511. However, the couple's joy was brief. The baby prince died within weeks. In 1516, Catherine gave birth to Princess Mary, but at least five other pregnancies ended in a heartbreaking series of miscarriages and stillbirths. Henry began to worry that his marriage might be cursed, as he had angered God by marrying his brother's widow. He became obsessed with the quote from the Old Testament. If a man takes his brother's wife, it is impurity. He has uncovered his brother's nakedness. They shall be childless. That's Leviticus 20:21. In 1526, Henry VIII fell in love with a younger woman, Anne Boleyn, who was charismatic, self-confident, and unattainable. The king may have desired her as a mistress, but Anne held out for greater prize. Henry would need to divorce Catherine of Aragon before he could have Anne. However, Henry may have been longing to marry Anne. He couldn't free himself as quickly as he'd hoped from his first marriage. It took 7 years for him to rid himself of his first wife. Catherine resisted, and without her consent, Henry needed the Pope to grant him the divorce. Sounds kind of simple, but Catherine's nephew was the Holy Roman Emperor Charles V, the most powerful ruler in Europe, and Charles controlled the Pope. So, only Henry VIII's force of will and use of his executive royal power made it possible. Encouraged by Protestant reformers who denied the authority of the Pope. And Pope Henry declared his independence from Rome in a series of acts passed between 1532 and 1534. Henry by now felt himself unstoppable. He insisted that all acknowledge him rather than the Pope as God's representative on earth. All those who refused were destroyed, including his counselor, Thomas More, who was executed at the Tower of London in 1535. When Henry VIII seized the wealth of the Catholic Church in England, he became possibly the richest monarch in English history. He lavished some of his newfound wealth on palaces and treasures. Anne Boleyn's failure to produce a son became the fatal catalyst for her spectacular downfall. Vicious rumors spread by surviving supporters of the old Catholic regime, accusing Anne of adultery and plotting the king's death. Despite her protest of innocence, Henry ordered Anne to the Tower of London. After a sham trial, she was executed for treason. Even before the execution of Anne Boleyn, had already selected a third wife, Jane Seymour, was one of Anne's ladies-in-waiting. King married Jane Seymour at Whitehall Palace only 10 days after Anne's death in 1537. The future Edward VII or VI was born in the lavish Hampton Court and was christened 3 days later in the Chapel Royal. Tragically, postnatal complications led to Jane's death at the palace soon after. For Henry, the birth of his son validated all of his previous political and religious choices. He now had God's approval. Some kings in the past had good qualities, but even they fell short. What they should be out marching for and proclaiming, they should be asking for a king. But they need to be asking for the King of Kings, the only one who can mend this broken nation and world. Revelation 20, verse 4, "And I saw thrones, and they sat on them, and judgment was committed to them. Then I saw the souls of those who had been beheaded for their witness to Jesus and for the word of God, who had not worshipped the beast in his image and had not received his mark on their foreheads or on their hands. And they lived and reigned with Christ for 1,000 years. At last, the world will know a perfect king that you cannot protest. He'll bring peace, prosperity, and perfect judgment." Mr. Irvin.